about the stochastic Rosen equation, bringing together chaos expansions, embedding theorems, and Catalan numbers. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here. Is the mic working all right? Can you hear me? Even louder? Okay. I'll try. This is joint work with my PhD student, Shiva Diti. He just passed his oral exam, and so we will finally try to write something. But so far, there is no preprint to go around. The title is pretty long. I try to be as descriptive as possible, but nonetheless, I omitted two probably most important words by hiding them with this article A. Those two important words are weak product. By saying a stochastic Burgers equation, I was trying to say that it will be Burgers equation in which nonlinearity is in the weak form. I will certainly explain all that. And just out of curiosity, who is familiar with Catalan numbers? Well, yeah, that was the first thing I discovered. Catalan numbers have nothing to do with Catalonia. And yeah, but that's good. So at least you will learn something. Yeah, it was probably the most remarkable thing, how these Catalan numbers appeared in this business. I'm trying to stay away from combinatorics as much as possible, but apparently I cannot succeed. So this is more or less an outline of the talk, as well as a brief summary. This is the Burgers equation I'm going to consider. And the key, as I said, is this diamond, which indicates weak product. I will explain on several occasions what it is, why we use it, and what are the pluses and minuses. One of the bottom lines is that for the deterministic equation, it doesn't matter. If there is no noise, then diamond or usual product, that's the same thing. And then I'm going to do the usual thing with this equation. I will look for the solution in this form, where u alphas are deterministic functions and xi alphas are random variables which form the basis in the space of functionals of the noise. And again, it will be explained in more detail. The basis is indexed by these multi-indices. And for the coefficients u alpha, you get a recursive system of deterministic equations. It is recursive, and the reason it is recursive is exactly that I'm using weak product. I'm solving this recursive system by induction. To solve it, to get nice estimates, I need embedding theorems because of the products which appear. And in the end, I'm getting this estimate for the norm, and the estimate involves Catalan numbers. And one of the conclusions will be that this is, to some extent, the best possible estimate. No matter how good or how bad your noise is, this is more or less the estimate you are going to get. People in the business of white noise analysis probably heard about Kondratiev spaces. This is the largest space of generalized random elements. And this square root of the factorial is basically the indicator that the norms, squares of the norms, grow as factorials, which is pretty bad, as you might expect. And that's why you need generalized spaces to work with that. And so Kondratiev spaces are exactly the spaces in which norms grow as factorials. Now, as always, I will give some formal motivations and background and everything, but I know right away that some people just object to a weak product on philosophical grounds. And I'm pretty happy with that. I'm still myself kind of trying to figure out whether it is a good thing or bad thing. And so I decided to present a motivation which is hard to argue with. Namely, while struggling with formulas, I decided to look at the people who are responsible for this. So Burgers is the one whose equation we are studying. Catalan is the mathematician after whom these numbers are named. Sobolev is, of course, the father of the embedding theorems. And Wick is the Italian theoretical physicist who introduced this special product. And I noticed that all of them lived for over 80 years. So maybe this kind of mathematics is good for your health. And this might be the best motivation for doing this. So now a little bit of the background about the Gauss expansion. By noise, I mean a collection, finite or countable, of independent standard Gaussian random variables. And then all square integrable functionals of this noise can be written as a linear combination of these basis elements. So this is how you make these basis elements. You start with a set of multi-indices. So it's an infinite collection of integers, but in each multi-index, only finitely many integers are different from zero. So you can define the length, and you can define the factorial by taking the sum of entries and the product of the factorials. And you can also establish some partial ordering by doing this. Then, using Hermite polynomials, you define these basis elements. For every multi-index, you take the product over the corresponding entries of the Hermite polynomials, and you normalize by the square root of the factorial because a Hermite polynomial has the norm squared equal to n factorial. And if you have a square integrable functional, then it is your Fourier series, if you want, in this space. But if the alphas don't sum up in squares, then you can assign weights, and then you get weighted Wiener Gauss spaces. So if R alpha is 1 over alpha factorial times some other junk, then that's your Kondratiev spaces, and to some extent that's the largest generalized space of random variables, which is in some sense interesting. One advantage of this Gauss expansion is that you can always define the expected value, even if it is very generalized, doesn't converge in square.
Speaking of the monitor, is it because of your laptop? Is it because of the
My laptop is okay for now. So
maybe check the connection.
Check the connection. Maybe this is weak connection.
No, my computer is not blinking. Not yet. Let's try. So whatever Gauss expansion you have, you can always define the expected value by taking the first element of the Gauss, because all other Hermite polynomials have expected value zero. So it is a reasonable definition. So that's one of the advantages of the generalized random variables. You have Gauss expansion, you have expected value. Now, this is a summary of the weak product. There are many types of weak product in the sense that you can define weak product for all kinds of random variables, not necessarily Gaussian, not necessarily zero mean. I am, of course, doing the easiest possible case when you have standard Gaussian random variables. And then the motivation is very simple. You look at how you multiply usual polynomials and then do the same for Hermite polynomials. Because Hermite polynomials are obviously tied to standard Gaussian random variables. So to make it easy to multiply things, you define your product by doing this. And then you develop the completely parallel theory of everything. Namely, whenever you have an analytic function, you get its weak analog by replacing usual polynomials with Hermite polynomials. And whenever you have two Kaus expansions, even generalized, you get a generalized Kaus expansion of the weak product. Again, it is convenient because this is a finite sum. And two generalized Kaus expansions, when weak multiplied, give you a generalized Kaus expansion of something else. Now, these normalizing terms come because of normalizations for this. Remember, I'm doing it for Hermite polynomials. These are Hermite polynomials divided by factorials, so I have to take it into account by doing this. By looking at this, you see that it is a convolution. Weak product is a convolution. And we'll get back to it on several occasions. One of the nice things about the weak product is that the expected value of the weak product is the product of the expected values. Again, something that is nice to have. Now about Burger's equation. There is a natural question, why would you consider Burger's equation in weak form? And the one natural answer is that you just do it. You have the product, you replace it with weak product, and you see what happens. Well, Boris Razovsky suggested an alternative explanation which kind of pushes the answer aside. It doesn't completely answer it, but it justifies it a little bit more convincingly. Namely, you think of Burger's equation as the second law of Newton for the specific velocity field. And your velocity field can be random, and then it can be either in the usual form or in the weak form. Now, how do you choose? Well, that's a different problem. Because basically, I get Burger's equation from the velocity field. Whatever velocity field you give me, well, I get the corresponding Burger's equation. So if I have the velocity field, which for some reason is better to consider in weak form, then by applying second law of Newton, I'm going to get this nonlinearity in the weak form. And the Laplacian part, as we all know, comes from the force, the viscosity part. So if you have the velocity field described using usual product, then you have usual Burger's equation. If you have velocity field described using weak product, you get Burger's equation in the weak form. And then the analogy continues. You have a Hopf-Hall transformation. You can replace all functions, all products with their weak counterparts, and then you get Hopf-Hall transformation in the weak form. So if you have this equation, whether usual or weak product, you apply Hopf-Hall transformation, then you will get this equation, again, either in the usual or weak form. And with the weak product, this has been done a while ago. I think Professor Zhang is the only representative of this group around here. And main conclusion in this investigation was that if you take a very bad noise, then you are forced to work with weak product. You cannot pointwise multiply bad random variables. And then you get the natural result. You have noise in the Kondratiev space, you get the solution in the Kondratiev space. Now, one of the conclusions of our investigation is that even if your noise is very, very good, you are still getting the solution in the Kondratiev space. So there is something special about the weak product. Weak product somehow messes things so much that even the best noise becomes the worst possible solution. So if I want to compare what we are doing with what other people are doing, well, that's the comparison. They have the worst possible noise, we can take the best possible noise and still get the same result, which in some sense is sharp. This is basically the sharp result. The norms in the Kaus expansion of the solution, if you consider weak product, the norms should grow as factorials, plus some junk, which is pretty much nothing compared to the factorial term. This is the toy problem where the noise is the best possible. It's just one Gaussian random variable. So if you are using the usual product, you can immediately write the solution. It will be a nice function. You don't have to worry about anything. With a weak product, you have to do the Kaus expansion. So you write the solution in this form. Because of the way weak product is defined, it's actually easier to write Hermite polynomials rather than normalized Hermite polynomials. So that's what I'm doing here with Hermite polynomials. I'm plugging this expansion into the equation. Look how weak product affects the coefficients, and that's how it affects the coefficients. As I said, it's a convolution, so you are getting a convolution, but one of the terms is differentiated because of this derivative. So this is the system of equations, which we call the propagator, because they describe how the Kaus, in this case, this simple random perturbation, how this simple random perturbation propagates through the equation. For the very first coefficient, you get the usual Burgers equation. For the second coefficient already, you are getting inhomogeneous linear parabolic equation. And this keeps continuing. So for all higher order Kaus coefficients, you're getting inhomogeneous parabolic equation that are linear. Your inhomogeneous term becomes more and more complicated, but it is inhomogeneous term. It contains lower order terms. So the equation is indeed, the propagator is lower triangular. Zeros coefficient depends only on the zeros. The first depend on the first and zeros. The second depends on the first, on the zero, first, and second, and so on. So it's a lower triangular system. You solve it by induction. Some work, but it's pretty straightforward.
And can you actually prove that you get something different in this case, if instead of a weak product, you consider usual product?
No, of course, I'm getting something different because I'm getting the result in the Kondratiev space. And with the usual product, you're getting a nice random variable, which is square integrable. So of course, I'm getting something different, yes. So to study the propagator, I have to look at, first of all, at that inhomogeneous linear parabolic equation. It is of somewhat special form. It is in divergence form with variable coefficient. Because of that multiplications I'm doing, I want to have things at least in A2. I'm not thinking about algebras. Forget about that. I just want to make sure I can multiply things pointwise. If I'm in negative Sobolev spaces, that's already a problem. A2 is something which at least allows me to multiply things pointwise, a priori. So that's why I'm considering this triple of Hilbert spaces in which I want to solve this equation. Then this is what I want. If the right-hand side is in A2 and the coefficient is once continuously differentiable, then the integral of the solution will be here, point-wise solution will be here, and this is the estimate I'm getting. So this is the basic estimate I need. And now, where the embedding theorems come in. The specific propagator equation is this. So coming back to the simple equation like this, now I'm just identifying A and F. A is the Kaus coefficient number 0. It's the solution of Burgers equation. Inhomogeneous part F is this convolution of the previous Kaus coefficients. So it turns out if the initial condition is nice, then the solution of Burger's equation is nice. You can get it directly by Hopf-Kohl transformation. And then because of this embedding, I can actually do pointwise multiplication and stay within the spaces I want to stay. And so when I look at this inhomogeneous term, this is the norm I want to consider. It works out all right. So I can indeed solve that system by induction, and induction works out because of these embedding theorems. And this is what I'm getting. Just very rough application of triangle inequality for the norm, and I'm getting this recursion. And this turns out to be exactly the defining recursion for Catalan numbers. Well, both I and my student didn't know about that. We spent about a week trying to figure out what this means. And then somehow at the same time, it occurred to us that indeed these are the Catalan numbers. And then everything became clear. So from this recursion and recursion for Catalan numbers, you get this estimate for the norms. So now, since Catalan numbers are really of crucial importance in this business, I wanted to say a few words about them. So the main reason for this slide is that I didn't know about Catalan numbers myself, and as I said, this was the first revelation I had. Then as I looked on the web, I realized that Catalan numbers in combinatorics are even more famous than usual binomial coefficients. This book by Richard Stanley lists, I think, at least 63 different kinds of objects which are counted by Catalan numbers. And the beautiful thing is that you can explain this even in a calculus class whenever you do cross product of vectors. You know, the cross product is not associative. And so if you take three vectors, you take the cross product, you have two possibilities. If you have more than three, then you have more possibilities. It turns out that that's Catalan numbers that count the number of different cross products, for example. And then tons of other things. Binary trees and triangulating a convex polygon in a special way. And these are different ways to write Catalan numbers depending on what you want to do. So this is how we came to them. This is how they are often defined in the literature, even though this doesn't even tell that it is an integer. This is how you can compute them recursively. And this also suggests that they grow exponentially as 4 to the n. But of course, you can look at this. You can apply Sturgeon's formula. And then you will get a precise asymptotic. This is how they grow. So for us, it was important to know that Catalan numbers grow exponentially. Because when we tried to solve that recursion by brutal force, we were ending up with super exponential growth, which was, of course, unacceptable. But this exponential growth is exactly what we want because it is slower than factorial. So we're staying within the Kondratiev spaces. And then this is the summary of the toy problem as a toy theorem. If you have this equation, then this is how the norms of the Kaus coefficients grow. So you have this kind of asymptotic expansion of the norm, which is basically the Kondratiev space except for this n cubed term downstairs, which makes it a little bit better. Which, of course, makes you wonder whether you can make sense out of it. We have no idea whether it is of any interest or not. But that's what you get. So you have Kondratiev spaces, which is the good thing. And as long as you believe in the triangle inequality as the way of getting estimates, you see that this is pretty much sharp, because that's what you are getting. Now, later on, I will show you more evidence in favor of the sharpness of this. And in fact, I think we even constructed a specific example of Burger's equation on a torus, where you have the equality in this case. So So indeed, the point is that even very simple noise gives you a solution which is a very bad random variable. So that's another thing to keep in mind. The solution is good as a function of t and x, because each Fourier, each Kaus coefficient is a nice function. But when you put everything together in the random variable space, then you are getting something bad. So it is a bad random variable which is good as a function of t and x. Now, this is the general result. I'm still keeping noise as space-time white noise, but you can argue that overall the noise is pretty bad. So I bet you don't often see the second derivative in space in the stochastic part of the equation. But it turns out that once you're in the Kondratiev spaces, then everything goes. You can, of course, you would want to have fourth derivative in here. But whatever highest derivative you have in the deterministic component, the same can go in the stochastic component. Kondratiev spaces can handle that as well. And then for this equation, you again get pretty much the same result. The noise is much worse, but the solution is still in the Kondratiev space. Once you do the analysis, now you have multi-indices, so you have to work with some multi-dimensional analog of Catalan numbers, which is, of course, not standard, but using generating functions and all that standard techniques from combinatorics, you get all the estimates you want. Now, this ratio of factorials, again, it's familiar to people in white noise business. This is not actually a factorial. This is junk, like product of k's to the alpha k's. So this is not a bad term. To summarize, once you have Burgers equation in weak form, good noise or bad noise, you always get the solution in this largest Kondratiev space. Now this is both a historical and bibliographical summary. There are several mathematicians with the name Arnold. One of them is Vladimir Arnold. That's a Russian mathematician. And he stated something known as Arnold's principle, which says something like, if there is a name assigned to some mathematical result, then usually the name has nothing to do with the result. One of the students of Arnold immediately said that then Arnold's principle is applicable to itself. But in the case of Catalan numbers, it is true. Catalan was not the one who invented these numbers. They were known to Euler and even to some Chinese mathematicians maybe 100 years before Euler. Catalan was basically the one who explained them in the modern way, so to speak. So it's probably more important to know who called these numbers Catalan numbers, because, of course, it was not Catalan. Similarly, Burgers' equation was not invented by Burgers. It was known maybe 20 years before Burgers, but he used it as a model of turbulence, and in fact, he studied this equation with random initial condition. Initial condition was space white noise. But of course, he was not considering weak product, because weak product appeared only in 1950s in physics, and then it took another 10 years for it to go into stochastic analysis. And as I said, usual Burgers equation is much better. It is known that if you consider usual product, then even with space-time white noise, you have a square integrable solution. The weak Burgers equation was so far studied only with the noise, which was so bad that you cannot use any other product. So, as I said, what turns out is that weak product somehow makes the equation so bad, or maybe not bad, but special, so that the solution has to live in the Kondratiev spaces. And this work is, I think, still ongoing, but that was the motivation behind our work. They were trying to do it for the Navier-Stokes, so we tried to do something easier. So that's That's the history.
What about Sobolev?
Sobolev embedding theorems, well, they go back to around 1930s.
But what about Arnold principle and Sobolev embedding theorem?
Oh, I don't know about that, really. Well, as always, you shouldn't take this literally. It just makes studying history a lot more fun. So, yeah, nobody probably thought about Sobolev theorems, where they come from, but maybe they were known before Sobolev. I really don't know. Yes?
There may be a comment. One should maybe mention that this Wick product in this equation is not a product on the state space.
Yeah, it is a convolution.
But not only a convolution, it's a convolution of the path.
Yeah.
So that is something, I mean, it's maybe perhaps many people are not aware of that this kind of product is nothing, it's not really comparable with a Wick product you want, right?
I will show you, as I said, for deterministic things it is the same. And there is another important class where it is the same.
But once you have a stochastic term, it's convoluting the whole path.
Yeah.
And it's not acting on the state space like you wanted from
well,
a PE.
Well, in a moment I will show you the connection. Yeah, it is true, but on the other hand, you are doing it to some extent every time you are doing it inter. You just never think about it.
I mean, which is different to the stochastic quantization, where really the Wick product acts on the state space, yeah, where you have those equations.
Yeah.
So this Wick-Burgers equation is something totally different.
Okay, maybe we should discuss it.
Can I ask again quite introduction question?
Yeah.
You said from the thing you introduced, it seems that every equation with some polynomial nonlinearity can be solved by if you interpret polynomial in the Wick,
yeah,
you can solve every equation.
Yeah. So actually, that's what I was talking about. When you have stochastic integral of an adapted process with respect to Brownian motion, then usual product is the same as the weak product. Well, it is a theorem. You would never think about it unless you really want to do weak product, but it is true. And this book just came out in the second edition, so apparently there is some interest in this. The book is all about weak product, and in particular it has this theorem in there. And that's another general result. If you use weak product, then you can use rules of ordinary calculus. If you don't want to use weak product, then you have to use eta calculus. Yet another way to look at the weak product is that it is an approximation of the usual product. Because Hermite polynomials are polynomials. This is the highest order term, and everything else is low order term. Weak product only takes into account this, so the usual product is a kind of approximated by the weak product if you ignore all low order terms. So there are many ways to think about weak product. There are other ways in the stochastic interpretation. It is very often the natural extension of the eta integral to non-adapted processes. Non-adapted processes, or maybe even non-Martingale integrants. So weak product is good from that point of view. It allows you to do many things similar to the usual classical stochastic calculus. But on the other hand, as I said, it can lead to some unexpected effects. So in the next few slides, I will show you some of those unexpected effects. I'm considering extremely simple examples because they really illustrate the effects of the weak product. Everything else, because there is nothing else, basically. It's just weak product versus the usual product. So this is an algebraic equation. I can solve it like this. If you think about it, usually this random variable has no moments. If, say, x is Gaussian random variable, then this random variable has no moments, but it is nonetheless a non-generalized random variable because you have an explicit formula for it. If you now write the same algebraic equation in the weak form, then this is what you get. This is a very generalized random variable for which, nonetheless, you can argue that the expected value is zero. Ah, sorry, one. The expected value is one. You start with H naught, which is one. The expected value is one, which is the expected value of the solution of this equation. If you formally take expected value, you will get expected value of u equals one. So that's kind of consistent, and that's one of the general features of the weak product equations. They preserve the mean dynamic of the equation, even if the equation is nonlinear. Again, it is a good thing. You can argue how relevant it is and everything, but mathematically it is good. And again, I was very surprised when I first got this. It was some funny sum, but then I learned that there is a group of people in Serbia working on this business on a more abstract level. And they treat this as a stochastic version of delta function. In their analysis, this expression is actually very useful. It is indeed kind of a stochastic version of delta function. So you can do some interesting mathematics even with abstract sums like this, which don't seem to have any sense. So I wrote that the weak product made things worse in the sense that instead of the usual random variable, I now have a generalized random variable for the solution. But I can also argue that it made things better because, for example, I can now compute the expected value. About quadratic nonlinearity. Now, from linear equations, I am moving to quadratic equations. So this is a quadratic equation. This is a standard Gaussian random variable. So use the quadratic formula, you have a nice solution. Now, what happens if I replace all products with weak products? Well, then you write Gauss expansion in this form. Again, you will get recursion for the coefficients. For the very first coefficient, you will get two possibilities, either 0 or 1. Quite surprisingly, both result in Catalan numbers. And the choice of the first coefficient just changes the sign. Now, here is another remarkable coincidence. One appearance of Catalan numbers is in the semicircle law. Those who know random matrix theory, semicircle law is the one which describes distribution of eigenvalues and everything. So it's a big deal in certain areas of probability. And so the moments of semicircle law are exactly Catalan numbers. The even moments of the semicircle law. The odd moments are zero, of course. And so here you have an algebraic equation whose solutions give you the moments of the semicircle law. I don't know, was it just a coincidence? Maybe there is more about it. But that's the fun part of doing this. You kind of along the way learn new mathematics which otherwise would never come to you. So that's another motivation for me to do this. But again, mathematically, weak product made things worse. I had a nice random variable, and now I have a very generalized random variable. Notice it is a random variable in this Kondratiev space. The norms of Hermite polynomials are factorials. So this is the Kondratiev space, and this is all exact. So this shows you how weak, quadratic weak nonlinearity leads to the Kondratiev space. So it's really everything exact, and you get a very generalized solution. So that's another evidence in favor of Berger's equation, that the result is sharp. But on the other hand, some algebraic equations in the usual form cannot be solvable. So if instead of the minus I take plus, then no real solutions. A weak product doesn't care, of course. So I still get my Catalan numbers, the same thing. Or you can look at these equations. But you cannot push it only so far, because, of course, if you just look at equations like this, they are totally analogous. The weak square root is the square root of the Hermite polynomial of second order, which is Hermite polynomial of the first order. You cannot take square roots of negative things, so you cannot push it indefinitely. There are some limitations. There are equations in the weak form which don't have solutions nonetheless. So coming back to the Berger's equation, as I said, let's look at this equation. This equation doesn't have a solution in the space of any reasonable random variables. You cannot pointwise multiply things. You cannot even pointwise multiply this. But as soon as you interpret it in the weak form, you get the solution in the Kondratiev space. And it is basically the same solution as we saw for the toy problem. The norm grows as a factorial times some exponential. So in this case, a weak product made the equation solvable. But in this case, weak product made the solution much worse. You don't have to go to the weak product to solve this equation. And if you do, your solution somehow becomes much worse. So what is going on, to some extent, is still a mystery. But at least from those algebraic equations, you now see that it is reasonable to expect. This quadratic nonlinearity in weak form forces your norm to grow as a factorial. And as I said, you can construct this equation on a torus. You kind of construct the equation to satisfy a specific solution, the other way around. And for that solution, you have exactly this growth of the norms. So indeed, for Berger's equation, it is sharp. Even for the best noise, weak product makes the solution bad. And this is what we hope eventually to prove in whatever form. The main objective is to close the subject. Because as I said, there are many, many equations with quadratic nonlinearity, and there is always this desire, you do one equation, then you do another equation, then you do another equation once you learn the technique. So it's probably a good idea to do it once and for all for equations like this, which should cover pretty much all reasonable equations. Navier-Stokes, all regularizations of Navier-Stokes and KdV.
Schrödinger.
And Schrödinger, but only with quadratic nonlinearity. Cubic nonlinearity will require something else and maybe some other type of combinatorial analysis. But for quadratic nonlinearity, most probably this is what is going to happen. With reasonable assumptions about the operators, you will always get the solution of the Kondratiev space. But in here, you can run your imagination wild. You can take any operators you want, as long as they are not much stronger than the deterministic operator. Any operator here will be a fair game. You will still get a solution in the Kondratiev space. Now, again, how important it is from the modeling point of view, I don't know. As I said, first of all, I want to have fun. And then I'd like to think that, okay, maybe once we know how to solve the equations, maybe other people will figure out how to model something with those equations. So that's a different question. So this is the summary. As I said, I am not a proponent of the weak product. I am not an opponent of the weak product. I am a student of the weak product. I am trying to understand what is going on. And here are three good things. Here are the three bad things. You can certainly add to this list. You can add to this list. But in the end, I believe that weak product is worth the effort to study. Even if it is not very physical, it certainly leads to interesting discoveries in mathematics. And so finally, again, these are the people responsible for mathematics behind our analysis. And as I said, that's another motivation for doing this. When you get stuck doing formulas, you can go and look at the biographies of these people, and you can learn something interesting about all of them. So for example, Catalan in mathematics is famous for Catalan's conjecture. Anybody heard of Catalan's conjecture? It is kind of Fermat's last theorem. If you write x to the n minus y to the m equals 1, well, that's the obvious thing. 3 squared minus 2 cubed equals 1. Catalan's conjecture is that this is the only possible situation. And this was proved like 5 years ago. So It is not as famous as Fermat's last theorem, but again, that's something I learned by doing this kind of mathematics, which is fun. Catalan at some point was expelled from Ecole Polytechnique for political activities. But nonetheless, he survived. Sobolev, of course, was not a political activist because he survived these years in Russia. Wieck, at some point, resigned from UC Berkeley because he didn't want to sign the Pledge of Allegiance that he was never a member of Communist Party. He was never a member of Communist Party. He just didn't want to sign the Pledge of Allegiance. So he resigned from Berkeley. He went to Carnegie Mellon. So that's, as I said, another fun part of doing mathematics because you also learn a little bit about history. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Are there some further questions or remarks? I have a non-mathematical question. What kind of political activity threw Catalan out of the Ecole Polytechnique?
Well, he was doing something during the revolution in France around 1948.
Okay, there are plenty of questions during the talk, but thanks again.